This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraja aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, HRRN Nation. Time once again for some Jock Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, all presented by our friends at Tito's Handmade Vodka. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, flying solo on today's show. My usual co-host, my usual entry mate, Christina McManigal, will be back in the saddle next week. But for the next hour, you're stuck with me. Coming to you, of course, from our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and extending a very special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206. For all of you tuning in on our website, on your smartphone, or your tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net, we welcome you to the program here as well. You know, since launching this show a couple of months ago, we've had the privilege to visit with many of our sport's top jockeys, both past and present. Mike Smith, John Velasquez, you've heard Chris McCarron, you've heard Richard Migliori, just to name a few. Plus, this show offers the added benefit of benefiting the PDJF, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And as you know, everybody who listens to this program and has listened to this show and all of my other shows over the course of the past several years knows how much that organization means to me. And giving back to those individuals who have given this sport so much. So many of the top riders who can no longer compete at the level that they used to compete at or compete at any level. And those people need our help. And you can visit pdjf.org to learn more about supporting the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And we are happy here on Jock Talk to give back to PDJF. And of course, our friends at Tito's Handmade Vodka equally happy to give back and do all we can to support those riders. Tonight, I'm joined by a man who has recorded 2,801 victories to date. His mounts have earned more than $116 million in purses. He was voted the Eclipse Award-winning jockey of 1998 and has found himself in the winner's circle for countless greatest stakes. He is, of course, jockey Sean Bridgemahan, who joins me from his winter base at Oaklawn Park. Sean, welcome to the program. Really happy to have you on board.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I know it's a bit chilly down there at Oaklawn, just like it is here in the Bluegrass today, so hope you're able to stay warm.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of an indoor kind of day, watch some TV. Wish I could go outside and enjoy something, but unfortunately, like everybody else, the weather has got us on lockdown.
You know, I look back on your career, and I mentioned your Eclipse Award as the leading apprentice in 98. You actually started riding races in 97, 18 years ago. And when I think of Sean Bridgemahan, Sean, I don't think of you being around this game for 18 years. It doesn't seem real, does it?
Not to me either. If you didn't say anything about it, time has gone by so quickly, and throughout my career, I've had a lot of fun doing what I love to do.
You were, of course, born in Spanish Town, Jamaica. Take me back to the beginning, and how did Sean Bridgemahan first become introduced to racing?
Well, as a little kid growing up in Jamaica, I have an uncle that was a jockey, but I was never interested in racing. My dad, very, very big racing fan, used to go to the racetrack every weekend. They run races on Saturdays and Wednesdays occasionally, but I was never interested until I got to my family moved to Miami, Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and my dad would take me to the racetrack on Saturdays and Sundays, and because school was always a first priority, and that was one of the things, when I decide to become a jockey, I made an agreement. He said, you have to finish high school first before I would go on and be a jockey. And that was one of the arrangements I made with him. So I wasn't able to race ride until I was graduated from high school.
You mentioned your uncle being a jockey. Did you have the chance to watch him ride at all?
No, not really. He rode a few races at, in Miami. He wasn't very, wasn't one of the jocks that won a lot of races. But he also had a job as an exercise rider when he moved from Jamaica also when he came to Florida. And I would go to the track with him also in the morning times.
What's racing like in Jamaica?
Oh, it's a big sporting event, obviously. Very small island that have a different, I think a lot of people are more recognized for the runners that come from there because obviously the infamous Usain Bolt, and they also have a lot of women track and field that I think is big. Soccer is also big there in horse racing, but like I say, not a lot of sporting event. Track and field, horse racing are basically their biggest sport.
Who's a bigger star in Jamaica, Usain Bolt or Sean Bridgman?
It's got to be Usain Bolt. That guy is nationwide.
Did you ever get a chance to meet him or anything?
No, I've never had the opportunity to.
Yeah. I wonder if he follows you when you're riding in the Kentucky Derby.
I don't know.
So when you first came to the United States then, and of course you're finishing your school, but your dad's taking you to the races, what do you remember about some of those early days going to the races with your dad?
At the time there was a couple of riders over there that was from Jamaica that was doing good. Nobody remember any about a rider called Michael Lee. He used to ride a call that was primarily one of the leading riders, but he was also from Jamaica, who I watched ride throughout my growing up, and Rene Douglas and stuff like that. I grew up watching these guys ride, who I thought was unbelievable riders, very, very good riders. And I never had the opportunity to ride with Michael, but he used to do good and Calder, one of the leading riders there, all, for the most part. But watch him just because he was from Jamaica and he did so well, and I admired his style. But like I said, when I got around to ride and he had got hurt and never was able to ride anymore, but I thought was an excellent, excellent rider.
Did you ever have a chance to talk with him and tell him that you were considering becoming a jockey, maybe ask him for some advice?
When I was growing up, yep, I did. And also, one of the jocks, obviously, when I was growing up was Mike Smith, that used to winter in Florida. And I used to go to the jocks room, sit down, talk to him, and Mike's become one of my best friends in the jocks room, and I could ask him for advice and stuff like that. He's a great guy to be around. And this is how I got started, asking a lot of questions from various different riders, and I've gotten a lot of help along the way because this is something I was interested in doing and was very much wanting to do the best I can. And a rider that helped me very, very much inspired me, like foundation-wise, took the time, is a guy who went to the jockey school in Panama with Alex Solis, Sebastian Madrid, and all, a guy called Juan Arias, who obviously, like a lot of our riders, as they go and got big for the profession, and he wasn't able to do it anymore. But he took the time out to help me a lot about, looking good on a horse and stuff like that. After I get done riding, I'd have to go back to the barn. He would be feeding in the afternoon. He'd bring a barrel out, put a saddle on there, and he'd tell me what to do. And I would sit there and practice for hours while he's feeding. And, he would help me a lot.
Wow. When you talk about Juan helping you look good on a horse, Sean, a lot of people aren't going to understand exactly what that means. What do you mean when you say looking good on a horse?
Well, I mean, when you go to race ride and how you should look on the back of a horse, the way you pose and, try to finish strong on a horse. And instead of when a horse is getting tired, what you want to do is not be all over him and stuff like you're trying to help them because they're getting tired and they're giving you their all. And what you wanted to do maintain a stillness and try to help them rather than get in their way.
Sean
so
Bridgman.
He was helping me with balancing, building my leg strength, and the process. Like a lot of people would look at Angel Cordero and say, man, he looks good on the horses because of the way, you know, he finishes strong and how he pushes with his hand and his rhythm of the horse. And this is what he was helping me with.
Sean Bridgman on Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Sean, go back to Mike Smith for a minute. I found it interesting that you mentioned Mike being one of the guys that kind of helped you and almost took you under his wing, so to speak, because he would sit down and talk with you when you were just getting started. He does that a lot. He's doing it now with young Dylan Davis, who was the apprentice jockey of last year. Do you find that now that you're in that veteran position, you're kind of doing that same thing with some of the younger riders?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, because nonetheless, you're out there and you're trying to, you want to see them do good. They're going to be the future stars of our game and they're the upcoming. And obviously, as we get older and stuff, like, you like to see younger guys, but also you have to ride with them. You want the safety and stuff like that to be a priority also. You don't want a guy going out there and doing the wrong things, obviously, you know, run himself in bad spot, put himself in a bad and going down. And if you happen to be behind him, you're going to be falling over him. So, you try to help young kids and show them the right from wrong and, you know, help them along the way. Because just like how I got here, somebody helped me along the way. So I like helping younger kids.
Have you ever had one of those moments with one of the young guys that you've helped out and you get into a race and they do exactly what you told them to do? And they beat you because of that? Have you ever had that happen?
Not quite. I mean, I try not to give up, there's difference in, you know, race ride. And like one had taught me how, you know, rhythm and in sync with horses. It's not when I got to New York and I was riding with Richard McLeary and reading the race and form and learn strategy and watching Jerry Bailey and Mike Smith and all these guys compete and Johnny. And then a guy like McLeary would take me under his wing and, you know, teach me the difference in race riding. Because when I came from Calder, I thought I knew how to race ride. I got 60 set of days because I thought I knew what I was doing, but come to find out, no, I didn't know what I was doing. I thought I did. And I got Richard Migliori and I have gotten into the confrontation because obviously what I thought was race riding was careless riding, and that's why I got 60 days. But he helped me along the way as far as race riding and analyzing a race and look at it.
What is race riding, Sean? What goes into that?
There's a difference between being careless and want to put somebody in a bad spot or in jeopardy or in a predicament. And race riding is trying to ride a clean race when you know there's a horse to beat. The only way you're going to beat him if he gets stuck, you're not looking to drop him or put him. But if you have him in behind horses and you can hold him right there, and by the time he gets out to make his run and the wire comes up next, and you beat him, that's race riding. But as far as crashing into him, and they're not bumper cars. And that's the difference between race riding and being careless. And these guys who want to impede other horses, you know, there's a fine line in doing it.
You know, it seems like there would be that, yeah, very fine line, because you're right. You cross that line and all of a sudden it goes from being a good race rider to being a very careless rider that puts the other riders in danger. How long does it take a jockey to really master that skill?
It'll take you a long while, a very long while. And it has to be something that, you know, you want to dedicate yourself to and pay attention to, because, like I said, it's a fine line where you can overdo things and it becomes very careless. And then on the other hand, you do it and it's like, man, that guy's a good rider.
Yep.
But it takes a long time. You're just not going to start right away and expect, oh, yeah, I'm a race rider. No, it comes with the more you ride, the more situation they throw at you and stuff like that, and different kind of horses, you learn these kind of stuff.
When you came out of high school, you mentioned that you promised your dad you would finish high school before becoming a jockey. Did you go right to the racetrack and as soon as you graduated and say, hey, let's do this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, graduated in June, and with a couple months thereafter, I dedicated every morning going to the racetrack, you know, learn as much as I can. And when I thought it was an appropriate time, the guy that I was galloping for, I told him, I says, you know, I think I'm ready to start riding.
How did you know?
I mean, you never know, but I thought I was getting enough horses where, you know, and it's nothing like riding a race. I don't care what anybody said. They can describe to you how much races that they've watched and seen. It doesn't matter that it's actually doing it. And it's the experience more than anything else. And I think the more you do it, it's the better you become.
So who gave you your first big break and gave you the chance to ride for the first time?
There's a guy, he actually died now, but he was one of the premier trainers I called. They're called Buddy Edwards, Oliver Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one that gave me my start at Calder.
Tell me about that first start. What was going through your mind, like the morning, the night before, and then the morning of?
It was very, you know, I was anticipated. Obviously, when you first start riding, you're not allowed to carry a whip. They basically want you to be safe. And I can see why, because they throw, it's a different aspect. I'm getting on the horse in the morning and breaking and just working. It's different. You got dirt throwing at you. You got to know how to, horses, and you're not breezing out there with one or two horses. You got five or six, seven horses surrounding you. You have to make a split second decision as you go along. Change your goggles, you know, pay attention to what you're doing and try to maintain and pay attention to your horse also. But so it's a lot of thing that goes on that you just need to pay attention to.
All right, I remember the first time I sat down behind the microphone back in 2003. And Sean, I'll tell you the truth, I've admitted this publicly before, I was shaking like a leaf. And it took me a couple of starts, so to speak, a couple of times on the radio before I finally started to get comfortable. I can only imagine what your nerves must have been like when you get the leg up, you're out there on the track with all the veteran riders that you've watched for years, and now you're one of them, and you're going into the starting gate for the first time. What was that like for you?
Oh, it's an exciting stuff, especially the anticipation of knowing this is what you want to do, and you're trying to make a good impression of, you know, so you're trying everything you can to not make any mistake and try to impress people so you can get a good start. And that's, you know, but in the meantime, like you say, nerves kick in and, you know, the whole nine yards, but the main thing, and also you have to be safe because, I mean, now that I've been ridden, I've been hurt a bunch of times, and, you know, looking back, you weren't thinking about that also. You just was excited about doing it because you thought that's what you were going to, you know, you wanted to be a jockey. So, get my first, you know, chance to be a rider, you just wanted to impress. Least mistake as possible, but like you said, nerves always kicks in.
Tell me about your first winner.
It took me seventh start before I won my first race. You know, my dad always go to the races whenever I was riding. So, you know, took me seven chances before. And finally, like I said, Buddy Edwards, I was riding a lot for him. He dropped the horse in, you know, where I thought it was. But this is the horse I was galloping every morning, and I kind of got a fail for him in the morning, so I knew in the afternoon what he would be like, and I'm going to ride him just the way I in the morning when I worked him, and he went to the lead and ended up winning.
Jockey Sean Bridgemahan here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Sean, you really were off and running, so to speak, after that first winter in 97. In 1998, just a magical year for you. Everything comes together. You win 199 races that year. You're the Eclipse Award-winning apprentice. So many great moments in 98. Look back on that year for me and tell me what it was like.
Oh, it was a good time. I mean, I started, obviously, you know, like I said, I got a lot of days when I was, so I ended up sitting out the last part. I started back at Gulfstream, rode the first 3 weeks there, and then my agent at the time, who was Corey Moran, asked me, would you be interested in going to New York? I said, well, I've never been beyond Orlando, Florida. I said, but if you're willing to give it a try, I said, and you're going to be there, I said, I'll go. So within a couple of days, we had our stuff packed, and we were on our way to New York. We rented a house there, and we stayed the winter. And that's where I met my wife, obviously. But I went there, and like within maybe a month or so of being there, I won like 6 races one day. Rode 9 horses, won 6 races, and I'm like, wow, unbelievable. I never seen cold weather in my whole life. And here I'm had to deal with the wintertime racing at Aqueduct, and it was extremely cold. I was born in Jamaica. I grew up in Fort Lauderdale, never knew what snow was, didn't know what cold weather was until I really got there. And but I have to say, I had a lot of fun, and I ended up winning a lot of races.
Yeah, the day you won 6 races at Aqueduct, I'm always curious. You will hear athletes talk about being in the zone. Does a jockey feel like that when everything's just falling into place on a day like that?
Yes. I mean, here am I thinking, like, I go in, I rode all the whole 9 car races. I thought I had a chance to win a few. And after one, start winning, and, you know, you go along, and you just feel like, man, this is absolutely, and you the more you win, the happier you get, and you just like, you know, the more you want to go out there and do it again. It's like a rush.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you kind of get the sense that anything you sit on is going to win because you're just having that kind of day?
Yes. And there was actually one other time I won 6 races, and I rode 7 horses at the fairgrounds. And, I ended up winning 6 that day, and I just felt like it doesn't matter what. Turn for home, I'm like, now looking back at it, I probably, you know, on a regular day, I would have did a different thing. Obviously, when you get beat, you're second-guessing yourself. But here am I, rode 7 horses, win 6 races, and the other one got beat a nose. And I'm turned for home, and it didn't matter. And I'm riding this horse, and I'm hitting right-handed, and he's battling. I never for once thought about hitting him left-handed. And any other day, you know, you're battling, and you try to get the most out of your mouth, and I'm like, man, my day is going so good. I'm just going to just keep doing what I'm doing. And I end up getting beat a nose, and I'm like, man, that was too. And I wanted to win that 7 that day, and I'm like looking back, and I'm like, God, I just should have. But I'm like, everything's been going my way. I just thought this one would have just gone the same way.
What would you consider, Sean? I know if you hear Peyton Manning and you hear guys like Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger, and they'll talk about the greatest pass they've ever thrown, or you'll hear a guy like Jack Nicklaus talk about the greatest golf shot that he's ever hit. How about for you? What would you consider to be the greatest race that you've ever ridden?
I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of good moments that I've had in my career. Like I said, winning 6 races twice in one day is like an unbelievable day. People don't know what. And then last year when I finished 2nd in the Derby, it just it was overwhelming. I was close, you know. I know, but I just feel like I'm getting closer on a long shot, and the favorite beat me, and that was I thought I gave a good ride. My horse ran good that day. Showed up and ran good. So, I mean, I don't know. There's a one particular day or one horse, one ride. I just think there's a multiple. That's what makes this game so good, is where, you know, every other day you never know what's going to happen, what it has to throw at you.
Yep. Yep. Now, you're not the only Bridge Mahan that people will notice out there on the racetrack around the country. Your brother Jermaine, also a jockey. And it must be a pretty big thrill for you when you had the chance to watch him ride. Did you kind of bring him along a little bit?
No, I didn't. Actually, I can't take credit for that. Like I tell you, my dad is a very big racing fan, and I think he has a lot to do with that, him being a rider also. But, you know, this is something like I wanted to do. Like my brother, I think, kind of followed my footsteps just because of the success that I have had. But my brother is actually the one with the brain, if you know what I mean. He had he's the one that had a chance to go to college, you know, like an academic scholarship, and he turned it down, and he wanted to be a jockey. I tried to influence him into taking that opportunity because, you know, I never had that opportunity. I knew what I wanted to do, and, you know, I wasn't good at school, but he was, and I think because of the success that I had, that he tried to follow in my footsteps.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's the better jockey?
Oh, he is. You know that.
Yeah, of course, right? Come on, you're being too humble. You're being far too humble, too politically correct, Sean Bridgemahan. Now, what was it like? I remember playing baseball against my brother. What was it like for you when you're riding against him? I know you've had the opportunity on some occasions.
Yeah, not a whole lot of opportunity, but I've had quite a few, and I mean, maybe a handful of times, but usually it's not where he's very, you know, we're very competitive or, I mean, there's one time at Arlington, I shipped in to ride a stake and he beat me right on the wire.
What was that like? Did you have a little conversation after the wire?
Oh, I wasn't happy about it. You know, it doesn't matter who beat me. I don't like to get beat anyway. So it didn't matter. I wasn't very happy about it, but I'm sure my dad was.
I think it's great that you're
not something that I take very, you know, lightly getting beat. I don't like getting beat.
Yeah, I think it's great that your dad encouraged both of you to, you know, kind of pursue this career the way that you have. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, he has a big influence on me being a rider and my brother also.
Would he often go to the races to watch you guys?
Oh, every opportunity he gets, he always does. And you know, he's very sick now. You know, he's getting older, so he doesn't do it quite as much anymore. But he still enjoys that. He has a racing channel at home, and he enjoys it still.
Give you a hard time if he bets on one of your horses and you get beat?
Oh, yeah. I used to hear about it all the time.
I can only imagine. Sean Bridgemahan here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Sean, if you'll stay with me here, we're going to step away for a quick commercial break. We're going to come back and we'll talk about some of the top horses you have accompanied to the post, some of your most memorable moments, and we'll continue this visit here in just a moment. This is Jock Talk. It's all presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, and it's right here on HRN.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit andwhybreads.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
For racing coverage from the inside out.
I still kicked away and I thought I really had it until the 16th pole. Amazing little horse.
International English events.
A clear round and under the time limit will get you into the jump off.
And hard-fought Western competition.
Here we go, guys. Let's help him. You bet. Woo!
Tune in to HRTV, the network for horse sports. Online at HRTV.com.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
I'll have another. He comes here to Churchill Downs. He gets the victory here impressively.
Today, the Phipps and Janney families and their trainer, Shug McGahee, with Joel Rosario, all headed to the winner's circle.
California Chrome, California Bred, he wins on this afternoon.
Only the fourth time a Cal Bred has won the Kentucky Derby.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
This is Eddie Delahoussaye. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
They're off the turn. They're into the stretch. A Breeze and Harlan's Holiday going at it head-to-head. Evening Attire is coming on through between horses. Lido Palace is toiling. Milwaukee Brew is stuttering. Nothing Flat on the far outside. And Evening Attire has come through to take the lead. And Evening Attire is going to do it. Going away to win the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Lido Palace was second. Harlan's Holiday was third. Close for fourth between Nothing Flat and A Breeze. The final time was 1:59.2, a sparkling effort from the Gray Evening Attire.
And Tom Durkin with the call, Evening Attire, so brilliant. The old veteran who competed at a very high level for a very long time, winning the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and boy, he was brilliant that year, and nobody knows it better than jockey Sean Bridgemahan, who was aboard for so many of his big races, including that one. And Sean is with us here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I want to welcome everybody back to the program. Don't forget, this show benefiting the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. We encourage you to do the same. Go to pdjf.org to learn more about the Jockeys Fund and how you can support those riders who have given us so much over the year. And Sean, really enjoyed the first half of the program, but want to give you a second to touch on that, because I know that you are a big advocate for PDJF and for helping those riders who have come before you and have really done so much for this sport.
Yeah, it's for a good cause. I mean, you know, like I said, I enjoy what I'm doing, and I can't imagine them guys, you know, have done so well, or even it didn't matter, but not able to do it and had to walk away the way they did, you know, so it is for a very good cause.
Does that ever, I mean, every rider knows that when they get a leg up, it might be for the last time. It's a very dangerous sport and you never know. Does that ever, or can that ever enter your mind as a jockey?
No, because that prevents you from doing a good job. And you just try to, you know, go out there and not think about stuff like that. Because if you have that on your mind, it's just that you won't be able to give 100%.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I've had several jockeys tell me that if that even enters into your mind, you're pretty much done, because it's,
yeah, you know, it's time to hang it up and go home.
Yeah. It's like any other athlete. We heard the clip of Evening Attire and that win in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Evening Attire was one of your big horses. You've been part of several, but talk about Evening Attire and that win in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. He was pretty special.
He was, and he had a big year that year also. You know, he won races in Saratoga. He won a race at Aqueduct. He won that race at Belmont. I mean, he was a versatile little horse, come from behind, but also, you know, honest. Gave you everything he had. Not much to look at as far as he won't wow you and say, wow, that's a beautiful horse. But when it comes race day, he gave you his heart. He laid it out there for you. And I really had some fun in riding him and for Pat Kelly, and won some nice races on him.
Yeah, he is one of those horses, as you said, that would give you everything he had when you asked him to run. And I can imagine that those horses have to be so much fun to ride, because you know, every time you ask the question, you're going to get an answer.
Absolutely, and that's all you ask from these horses. You know, it doesn't matter what kind of strategy you have in your head. It doesn't matter if you ask them to run and you don't get a response. It don't matter where you think you should be or where you want to be, because if you don't have the horse to get where you need to be, it doesn't really matter. So it is a gratifying feeling that when you have a horse like this and you ask him, he gives you what he's got. You can ask for nothing else.
Who are some of the other horses, Sean, that you have been around or had the chance to ride that when you sit down and think back on your career, you're just never going to forget those horses?
I've ridden Midnight Loot, one start in Saratoga in the 4-go, who ended up winning back-to-back Breeders' Cup sprint races. He was pretty nice horse that I've ridden. I've ridden a horse called Pyro. I've won a bunch of races on also. Very, very nice horse. Majestic Perfection, got beat one time, won grade one races, Kodiak Cowboy. I mean, the list goes on and on, but those are some really, really nice horses that have been around, ridden, and, you know, very fun to ride. I've had the opportunity to ride Red Bullet one time. He ended up winning the Preakness when I was just starting out, and I think I had the bug in New York, or I might have just, but I had the opportunity to break his maiden. He ended up going on to win the Preakness, but I've ridden some really, really nice horses in my career.
Where does a horse like Private Vow rank for you?
Private Vow, I mean, made a lot of money, but I didn't. I think I only ended up winning like one race on him. Was a Jockey Club at Buddy Jockey Club race in Churchill, and that's probably the only time I ever won on him. But here's a horse, he tries very hard. He was obviously on the Derby trail. I rode him in the Arkansas Derby to prep for that, but I mean, you know, he was a nice horse. He tries every time.
Yeah,
over there.
Yeah, and I think the reason I wanted to bring up that horse, because that was your very first mount in the Kentucky Derby, and it was, of course, in 2006. Look back on that day, because you made a little history that day too, if I'm not mistaken. You were the first Jamaican-born rider to compete in the Derby, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is our goal, you know, try to win the Derby, and the fact that that was my first time riding it was pretty special. You know, made my family proud, and, you know, one of the horses that obviously got me to where I am today.
Yeah, what was that first Derby like for you, coming out on the track, playing in my old Kentucky home? I always hear how emotional that is. Was it emotional?
Oh, it's very emotional. And just to think, there are so many riders in the country all over the world. There's 20 that's selected to ride that specific race, and that's America's most important race right there. It's very emotional. And the thing that, oh, yeah, I'm one of the chosen 20 that get to sit in the starting gate here is a very gratifying, good feeling.
How about being the first Jamaican-born rider to compete in the Derby? That had to mean a lot, too.
Big accomplishment.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I know it wasn't lost, Sean, on a couple of rap stars, either. They kind of like that fact, too.
What you know about Sean Bridgemore? What you know about Sean Bridgemore? First Jamaican in the Kentucky Derby. First Jamaican in the Kentucky Derby. What you know about Sean Bridgemore? What you know about Sean Bridgemore? First Jamaican in the Kentucky Derby. First Jamaican in the Kentucky Derby.
I just couldn't resist, my friend.
I know, I see that.
How great is that, though? So somebody, Das Racist is the name of the rap band, and they put you in that song. I thought that was pretty cool.
I thought so, too. I never met these guys, don't know who they are, but somebody told me one day that they heard there's a song about me, and I'm like, no, not me. So then I went to YouTube, and I searched, and I found it, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, made me feel good, though. Don't know who these guys are, but it made me feel pretty good.
Well, I think they've had you in a couple of their songs, haven't they?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Wasn't there?
But like I said, I don't know who they are and where they're from, but yeah, I did listen to both of those songs. It's funny.
Yeah, I thought it was outstanding, and just to have your name mentioned in a song is pretty cool.
I know. This Rajiv Maharaj got nothing on me.
Talk about that's right. Rajiv never been in a song before, has he?
No, he's got a ways to go before he catch up to me, I'm telling you. He hasn't had no rap song about him yet.
You and Rajiv, both, of course, from Jamaica. That's a fun little rivalry between you two, isn't it?
Yeah, Rajiv's a very good rider. You know, obviously his record and his statistic has shown that, you know, how good of a rider he is and how well he's done. He does very well, and because he's a good rider, and I'm very happy for him. He won the big race this weekend and in Gulfstream on a pretty nice other horse named Sequence. But goes to show you, he's another rider that came from Jamaica that's made a good name for himself and has done well.
Yeah, no, he's done an amazingly good job. And I think, Sean, quite frankly, I think he's probably one of the more underrated riders in the game today, much the way I've always said that you are. I don't think that for whatever reason, either of you really get the credit that you deserve. And I don't know if there's any sense of that on your part. If you ever feel like, hey, you know, I can run with the big boys. I am just as good as a Mike Smith or a Gary Stevens or a whoever it might be, a John Velasquez. Does that ever enter into your mind or to a jockey's mind in general?
I'm sure it does. But for me, you know, like I've been there, I've ridden with all these guys, you know, on the, you know, in Saratoga, and obviously I was in New York for a long time. But, I mean, I'm just happy for the opportunity that I've gotten in this game and to accomplish the things I have. You know, I don't feel like anybody owes me anything. And, you know, I'm just happy for whatever they have gotten.
Yeah. Yeah. Sean Bridgmahan, you know, on Jock Talk.
It's a sport that, you know, everybody's trying to compete and accomplish the same thing. So, I mean, that don't make anybody better than any, just the opportunity that you've been given and how lucky you get in accomplishing it.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned meeting your wife when you moved to New York. Was she involved in the racing business too?
Yeah, she was assistant trainer for, at the time, John DeStefano when I met her.
Okay.
And obviously she's been assistant for John Terranova and Steve Coceris and stuff like that.
Yep. And now you have how many kids together? Three?
Two boys.
Two boys. And
yeah, Alexander and Steven.
Would you encourage them to be jockeys?
They have no chance.
Too big.
Oh, they're way too big. They're way too big.
Would you want them to be? If they were short, anyway. If they were smaller, would you want them to be?
I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, it's very taxing game, and trying to balance your weight. You have to watch what you eat. You don't live a normal life, you know. And you know, I'm one of the fortunate ones that's been able to accomplish a lot of things and do very well. But there's also a lot of guys that, you know, really try very hard on a daily basis. You have to hit the box, you know, watch what they eat. And if you're not really cut out to do it and dedicate yourself and discipline yourself and trying to maintain your weight, I mean, it's easy to get bigger and just kind of, you know, lose control. But, I mean, you have to maintain a lot of discipline. And it's, like I said, it's a lot of work, and it's 7 days a week, and it's a lot of work.
How hard do you have to work at maintaining that weight?
The older I get is, the harder it's become for me to, because obviously, you know, your body slows down a little bit, your metabolism doesn't, you know, is not as work as fast as you are when you're younger and stuff. So it slows down and, you know, you have to maintain pretty good discipline.
Yeah, I can only imagine how difficult that has to be. I've heard stories of jockeys, Lafitte Pinkai, as you hear that famous story of him flying cross country and eating a single peanut, and that was it. And he ate half on the way out and half on the way back just because he wanted to maintain his weight.
You hear stories, but there's a lot more, you know. That's just one story you hear from, like, a guy like him, but there's plenty more. You know, it's, like I said, it's not a normal lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's not a normal lifestyle for your family either, because you're like right now at Oaklawn Park, they're not with you all the time. And I'm sure you'd rather be closer with them, but you have to go and do your job at various racetracks around the country. How challenging is that on a family of a jockey being away from each other so much?
It is very, very tough. The good thing is, you know, I have the right person to the right partner that I have. My wife has done a phenomenal job with the kids and without me being there. But it is hard being away from them. But this is what you have to do to, you know, obviously support your family and, you know, try to maintain your business and go forward. But, I mean, got to be appreciative of my partner, my wife, and she's just done a phenomenal job.
Who does the cooking when you're not there? Because I know you like to do a lot of cooking.
Oh, I love to do the cooking, but she has to step up and do it when I'm not.
Do you have a specialty?
No, I like making Italian food. I like chicken parmesan, so I like making that.
How about Jamaican food?
Oh yeah, I'm pretty good at making Jamaican food.
Jerk chicken?
Yes.
I'm gonna hold you
pretty
to
good.
That. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll take the chicken parmesan too. That would be okay.
Yeah, I like making chicken parmesan. It's just something that's very gotta watch. It's like a treat when I get to eat it, just because of how it's made. You know, with all that cheese, you just can't maintain. You can't eat too much of that. With you know,
yeah,
gotta watch your weight. Gotta wait till it's off time to do that stuff.
All right, let me ask you this question. You're locked in a side-by-side battle coming down the stretch, one-on-one with another rider, another horse. Who's the toughest jockey in the game today to get by?
Oh, man, there's a lot of good riders out there. But, I mean, from a physical standpoint, I think, John Velasquez and Mike Smith are like two of the, you know, obviously in the game right now, very, very strong and competitive. But Johnny, I think he's a tough customer.
Yeah, what makes him so tough?
Johnny's a good rider. Obviously, his record, like I said, speaks for itself. And, you know, he's a strong finisher on a horse. And, you know, since day one, before I even start riding, he was one of the riders that I've always admired, you know, growing up. And even though, you know, Alex don't ride a lot of horses, Alex Solis, he is also a strong, strong finisher on a horse. He is, I mean, very, very strong finisher.
Yeah, we started off, Sean, talking about what it took and how long it took you to become a safe rider and learn the proper way to race ride, so to speak, as opposed to being careless out there. What's the biggest change you've experienced as a rider over the years since you first came on the scene in 1997?
Well, the experience I've gained also. I mean, the more I do it, is the better I've become, you know, in trying to be a safer rider than I was when I just started out. I put myself in bad spots, you know, not that I don't do it, you know, these days, but I tend to do it less and less just because I know the difference now. I know, you know, right from wrong. Before, when you're young and you thought you knew, and the more you go along and the more you learn. And I think, you know, doing it and practicing more and paying attention and riding with better riders that know where they are on the racetrack, and it helps you also.
What do you mean?
Like riders that, you know, there's riders that ride that don't know where you are or how much horse they have and stuff like, and they're all over the racetrack. But riding with better riders make you better, make you want to step your game, and you learn a lot more from those guys. Because I rode in the days of Jerry Bailey before Bailey retired, and I thought he was one of the riders that strategically knew where you were at all times.
Really?
Yes, and I mean, I learned a lot just, you know, watching him and riding with him, and picked up a lot from him also.
Yeah, and that's
like I say, Richard Migliori, he doesn't ride anymore, but I thought he was one of the better strategic rider that I ever rode with.
Okay, that's one thing that,
same thing.
Yeah, people won't be as familiar with is the preparation that jockeys put in before they get on that horse and go out onto the racetrack. There's a lot of things that you're doing beforehand to familiarize yourself with that horse and with the other horses in the race, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, I cannot just go out there, get a leg up, and guys say good luck and expect to ride a day. I ridden with these guys. They know where they are. They do their homework and know where who's going to be where in a race, where he should be, and who they can follow. If you're coming from behind, you want to follow a horse that's going to carry you a ways, and then, you know, obviously, if you're good enough, come from, you know, get away from that horse and end up beating him. But, like, if there's a lot of speed in the race, you know, you got to know, there's four or five horses who all want to do the same thing, and who's, you know, going to be there, and should you take a hole and just sit, or you know, stuff like that. A lot of preparation going in, going, you know, good riders, they do their homework and know where they are at every time on the racetrack.
One question I get from a lot of people that I'll take to the track for the first time when they're just learning about the game, they'll say, do riders have a preference on what kind of horses that they ride? For example, a turf horse or a dirt horse or a sprinter or a come-from-behind horse. Do riders have certain preferences and certain horses they might be a little more comfortable with?
I think so. I mean, for me, I'm more comfortable being closer to the pace, positional rider, rather than coming from way, way back, you know, because with that being said, you're sometimes a victim of circumstances, which is the pace don't go fast enough for you. And then when they start running, and then you have to make up all that ground. So now you become victim of pace. But if you're forwardly placed, you can dictate when you can move and when you, if you need to sit longer or what's going on. I really do think that, you know, and they'll tell you, nothing beats a fast horse. You have the best horse in the race, you're going to win.
Yep.
But obviously, you know, position, I think, is very important.
How about tendencies? We hear that in other sports, like basketball, where player can't go to his right, can't go to his left. Do jockeys develop those?
Yes. People are creatures of habits, and there's riders that just, you know, they prefer to be, you know, on the lead, for instance. You know, if not, like, right there, you know, you see it yet. And I think, riders do tend to do that also.
Now, I can imagine that you could use that to your advantage, though, right? Knowing that a jockey prefers a certain style.
Absolutely. I mean, when I go and I handicap my races, you know, there are certain riders that like to, even though if their horse has a little bit of speed, they're going to use them. Either they're going to be on the pace or close to the pace. So you always automatically, well, this guy has speed. You know, even if this horse got a little, he's going to make him sure show a little bit more speed. So, yeah, that all comes into factor.
Sean Bridgemahan on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Sean, I'm going to put you on the spot for a minute here. Finish this sentence for me. When I stop and look back on my career, the one thing I'm most proud of is?
I guess the 18 years that I've been riding. And all the accomplishments I've made. Proud of it. Because it's a day-to-day tough grind kind of business, and the accomplishment of being riding for 18 years says a lot. I mean, there's riders that don't make it, though.
You mentioned your accomplishments. What do you consider to be your greatest accomplishment?
Probably winning the Eclipse Award as an apprentice, I would still have to say. I mean, a lot of people says, yeah, Brendan, but I, you know, just that I have that to show. And also, I've been leading rider multiple places, from Aqueduct, Arlington Park, Churchill Downs, and Fairgrounds. I mean, I've accomplished leading rider there. So, I've had a lot of great moments in my career.
What would you still like to accomplish moving forward?
We got close in the Derby last year. I'd like to win that.
Yeah, second with Commanding Curve. Yeah, that had to be a bit frustrating, wasn't it?
Yeah, but he showed up and he ran his heart out for me, and that's all I can ask. You know, hopefully I'm going in the right direction, and one day one of those will have my name on.
How hard is it to win the Kentucky Derby?
I think it's proud of the artist race to win, just because it's a race that's unlike any other race that you'll ever ride in your life. It's because 20 horses going in. I mean, what the horses have to do before the race is they come on the crowd, everything, and you have to pay attention, just because you have to pay attention in the sense that you're not on a regular basis. When two horses are outside waiting to go in the gate, you'll hear the stars. So we got two left. And that day, you can't hear nothing. You have to pay attention because the crowd goes so loud that you don't want no mistake at that point. And it's one race that if in a race that you're like yelling to somebody because you're in a bad spot, please don't do that, because all you're doing is alerting them that you're there and you're not going to get a chance. On a regular basis, they'll give you a chance on any other race, but not that one. That's why it makes it so difficult. And your horse have to be in a at his best at that day.
So many times I'll hear jockeys talk about having a plan A and a plan B, maybe even a plan C for when the starting gates open. I would assume, you do too.
Like I said, there is no, this is just one race that, I mean, it's hard to describe because it's the race you want to ride, but you have to be alert and pay attention. And I mean, I don't think you can make any mistakes.
Yeah, that can't be easy. And like you said, so many horses, so many split second decisions.
How many times are you have to ride a 20 horse field throughout the year? Never.
Yeah.
It's just the one race, and if you happen to catch a sloppy track, your horse don't have speed. You got to have enough goggles. You know, I mean, a lot of factors go into it.
How many pairs of goggles will you typically wear in a race?
Depends on how far I'm going, and it all depends on the kind of horse I have. If I have a speed horse, I'll wear 4 goggles. If I do have a horse, I can't wear 5. I've ridden in the Derby where the track was sloppy. I had no speed, and I wore 7.
Wow. Did you go through all 7?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And was looking for more.
Sean Bridgman on Jock Talk.
Just one race that... It's unlike any other.
I can only imagine. Sean, just a few minutes left. We could spend another hour. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. It's flown by. I always like to end by having our guests tell people something they might not know about them. So outside of horse racing, when Sean Bridgman gets a chance to watch another sport or do something else, what else do you enjoy doing or watching or following?
I like basketball, and I like going to a basketball game, you know. So when I'm not riding, another sport that I follow, and I really like it. And outside of that, I enjoy cooking.
Do you have a favorite team that you'll follow with basketball?
Yeah, growing up in Miami, I like the Miami Heat.
Yeah, so it's NBA basketball, not college.
Right, NBA basketball, yes.
All right. Do you ever get a chance to meet any of those guys, the Miami Heat?
Yeah, well, obviously, Rashard Lewis was playing for the Heat last year, and I know him because I've ridden some horses for him, like Cigar Street. He owns Cigar Street and White Rose, who I won a couple races at Keeneland on in stakes. I mean, he owned her, so I had an opportunity to meet him.
Did you tell him you could take him one-on-one?
Oh, no, I would never do that.
He's got a bit of a height advantage.
Oh, yeah.
Who? What's the most famous person outside of Rashard, obviously? But what's the most famous person you've had the privilege to meet in your riding career?
I've met that guy, Sean White. Met him in Saratoga last year. Jimmy Buffett was at the fairgrounds one year. I took a picture with him. Yeah, he in the winner's circle, and. Scottie Pippen last year came to the jocks room. Chris Rock.
Yep.
He came to the jocks room last year and took a picture with him also.
I'm still waiting for you to get to my name.
Mike Fanna?
Yeah, I noticed that one didn't exactly roll off your tongue. Sean, look, it's been an absolute delight, and I can't thank you enough for spending this hour here on Jock Talk with me, and really want to wish you all the best. Safe trips going forward, and can't wait to see you when you get back up here for Keeneland.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right, pleasure really,
talk.
Really do appreciate it. Sean Bridgman here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Man, so much fun to visit with him. He's such a charismatic person, somebody who loves this sport, and he did it all on his own, and he did it the right way. You heard him talk in the beginning about putting in the time. He went to high school. He promised his dad, I'm going to finish high school. He did it. Then he went on to become a jockey, and he talked about learning from Juan Arias and Mike Smith and all the hours that he would practice and practice and practice before he finally felt like he was ready. He's such a great story, such a great person. And all the best to Sean Bridgman. Can't thank him enough. Again, Christina McManigal going to be back in the saddle next week here on Jock Talk. So make sure you check that out. Go back, and if you missed any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. Podcast will be available. This show and every show right there, horseracingradio.net. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Jock Talk.